Begin, so why don't we begin with the Technical Advisory Committee meeting with the approval of the minutes. Are there any, hopefully everybody's had a chance to review those prior. Are there any corrections or additions to the minutes? If not, would entertain a motion to approve.
So moved.
Second, please.
Second.
All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposition?
Hey, Greg.
Yes.
We've got a few.
Oh, we do?
New faces.
We got some new faces, so you want to? You want to introduce those?
Yeah, Seiya Chukwuzadu with MPO.
Oh, Greg Wathen with Economic Development Coalition of Southwest Indiana.
I'm Angie Higgins with the Eastern Sills Rehabilitation Center.
Nick Hall with Tucker Transportation Cabinet.
Doug Taylor with HMB Engineering out of Frankfort, Kentucky.
Pam Drog with the MPO.
Chris Gentry with NDOT.
Brooke Wilson with Metz.
John Petkosik with David Matthews Associates Appraisers and Consultants.
Brian Aldridge with Stantec, we're part of the Parsons team working on the I-69 Awards project.
Jim Bumby, Adamsville MPO.
Laura Lamb with the MPO.
Aaron Schreifer with the MPO.
Matt Schreifer with the MPO.
Jason Orange, KYTC.
Jeff Whitaker with Quantum Miller Group.
Sierra Nunez with the Arc of Evansville.
Carrie Aiken with the MPO.
I think that's everybody. Thank you for being here, appreciate it. Especially on a very relatively cold. It's all right. Nate, how you doing? So Nate, why don't you introduce yourself since we've introduced everybody for those some new folks here.
Yeah, especially.
And you're relatively new, well, you're relatively new, but you're all at the same time.
My apologies. Nate Hahn, I'm the new executive director at the airport.
Thanks, Nate. We just approved the minutes. Let's go into old business, Pam.
All right, your project updates in your packet. It's a little skimpy this time, but there's some exciting stuff to report. Vanderburgh County, Columbia, Delaware Bridge. The county received proposals from consultants for construction inspection, and those proposals are under review. On the NDOT projects, the fix for 41, or the bridges over the Ohio, the existing bridges, the entrance ramp for the southbound US 41 from Veterans Memorial Parkway and Kentucky Avenue is closed. Access to Waterworks Road remains a right-in, right-out. All traffic, both northbound and southbound lanes, are on the reconstructed northbound US 41 lanes. And with traffic in this configuration, allows for work to remove the bridge decks and cut out the pavement replacement portion of the southbound side of 41. This work will continue through the winter. And then Ohio River Crossing, I-69, we'll hear more from that next agenda item. But the draft environmental impact statement was published in December 2018. Public hearings were held on January 7th and 8th to gather input on the preferred alternatives. And there are community conversations scheduled for January 23rd and 24th as another opportunity to learn more about the project and provide input to the project team.
Any questions? Thank you, Pam. So I think we're moving on now to Brian with the I-69 Ohio River Crossings Preferred Alternative.
On behalf of the entire I-69 project team, I appreciate the opportunity to be with you again today. I was just showing the video as you came in of the preferred alternative that was shown to the public this week, as Pam just mentioned, at public hearings on the 7th and 8th. Had really pretty good turnout at both meetings. We were in Henderson Monday night. I think the official sign-in was about 225. And then Tuesday night, I didn't get the official number, but well over 100 folks were there. And for those of you who are familiar with the MDOT public hearing process, both sides of the river followed that same process. So there was a formal comment period where anyone who wanted to speak was given up to 3 minutes. And I think both meetings had the same number of speakers. We had 33 members of the public that voiced their comments. And we'll talk about a few of those comments as we go through this presentation. This is really kind of a high-level overview, and much of the information, I guess I should ask first of all, who was able to actually attend one of those public hearings? So I apologize in advance, but some of this information, or actually all this information, is really going to be kind of what you've already heard, because, again, this is a major milestone we've reached right now. And, you know, this is kind of where the project was back in 2003, 2004, and Doug's kind of nodding back there, he was around for that time, when the original environmental impact statement. We got to a draft EIS. We were in the process of working through the final EIS when we determined we didn't have a financially feasible project. So that's kind of where we are in the game right now, is how do we make sure that doesn't happen again. So that's kind of one of the key messages we've been trying to get across to the public through the course of meetings over last year, but especially over the last couple of meetings this week. So again, just about a month ago now, the draft EIS was published. And so our comment period officially goes through the first week of February, but we'll take comments, you know, well beyond that, certainly. But the official comment period for specifically the DEIS is through the first week of February. It does identify preferred alternatives. And I say alternatives a little bit loosely there because really we're talking about one infrastructure option. And I'll talk about specifically what that means in just a second. The difference is how we might examine tolling. So we'll explain what that means. Obviously, the DEIS is part of the decision-making process. And again, one of the key messages is the inclusion of a preliminary financial plan, or at least some information that's going to inform the preliminary financial plan. So that's really kind of, a critical stepping stone that we've got ahead of us to determine and try to provide a little bit more clarity to what that ultimate financial plan will look like. So obviously, draft environmental impact statements have a tremendous amount of information included in them. And this is written in really more of a what we call a reader-friendly format. So the appendices are going to be where you find most of the actual technical documentation. For those of you that don't deal with the NEPA process on a daily basis, you know, these environmental documents are supposed to be for the layperson to read. They're not supposed to be for the technical expertise in the world to be able to understand. It's supposed to be for the general population to understand. And so this document is written in a little bit different format than maybe some that you read before. It's still lengthy, don't get me wrong. It's a great thick three-ring binder. But if you're looking for really more of the technical information, most of that's going to be found in the various appendices. All of it's available on the website, as well as a number of other locations throughout the community. We're keeping the project offices staffed with some of our project management team as well throughout this comment period. So if you want to stop by the Evansville or Henderson offices for the next 3 or 4 weeks, you'll find at least one of us from the consultant management team at the office at any time. So let's talk a little bit about the preferred alternatives. I mentioned that they are identical in terms of the actual infrastructure that's provided. So when I last met with you guys back last, I think it was September timeframe roughly, we had narrowed it down in the July and August public meetings and presented that we were only examining options that included maintaining no more than one US 41 bridge. At that time, the decision had not been made as to which bridge might be maintained. So if you remember, the northbound bridge is the older of the two, built in the early 30s. The southbound bridge is the newer, built in the mid 60s. The project now includes the construction of the central alternative one, which is the bridge to the east, obviously, between the existing US 41 crossings and Green River confluence with the Ohio. That would be obviously a four-lane interstate facility that could be ultimately restriped to 6 lanes. So very similar to what was built with the east end crossing with the Ohio River Bridges Project in Louisville. Again, built initially with 4 lanes, but at wider shoulders, that can be restriped and still provide shoulders that meet today's design standards but provide an extra lane if it's ever needed. Total project length is 11.2 miles, 8.4 of that is new construction. So back when I-69 was signed in Kentucky, when the remnant of the Breathitt Parkway or Training Route Parkway was restriped as I-69, all that section between the Western Kentucky Parkway and the 425 bypass was updated at that time. So there was a agreement with the Federal Highway Administration that dictated what steps had to be taken to be able to actually put those interstate shields out there. That included interchange upgrades, what have you. So there's still a section north of the bypass that does require some updates. And we're still working with the Federal Highway Administration as to exactly what those updates are going to have to look like. But what we presented at the public meeting is what we have looked at thus far and got at least some preliminary feedback on. Basically, it's trying to clean up some of the weaving distances between the ramps there around Zion Road and between Zion Road and the Ogden Parkway. There are 3 new interchanges. We'll talk about those in just a second, as well as some improvements to those interchanges we just talked about. The new interchanges would be at the north end, the new connection to existing I-69 at US 60 on the east side of Henderson, and then there's an interchange proposed with the remnant of what's now US 41. One thing that's changed since we last met is that there is a reconfiguration that we have developed over the course of the summer about how that connection with US 41 is made. Previously, what we were showing was locating a service interchange immediately kind of east of the Walmart area, if you will, near the subdivision, that would provide a surface road connection back over to the US 60 interchange. So there's a development that was already planned in that area. We were basically going through that development, and so we could provide access to the development off of that new service road. We've heard loud and clear after the public meetings last summer that the business community was concerned about Central Alternative truly serving as a bypass to the traffic that's currently traveling through the strip. And so they wanted to see a better, more direct connection to the remnant of the strip, 341. So there's a new interchange configuration that provides free flow ramps and flyovers, and there's not going to be a diamond or any signals proposed with that reconfigured interchange. Question we've gotten over the course of the last couple of meetings, you might imagine, is when can this open to traffic? And we've tried to explain that obviously it depends on funding, but under the most optimistic of scenarios, if funds are going to be available for our disposal in the relatively near future, we've suggested that the soonest to get open to traffic is 2020. Again, that's, as we all know, it's a big project that's very optimistic. Basis for selection, why the Central Alternative was chosen over West 1 and West 2 is really a multitude of different factors. Many of those we talked about last summer when I presented before you, but it comes down to basically these 5 points really kind of get to, I think, the heart of it. So, fewest number of residential relocations, there are only 4 required for this construction project. No commercial relocations, and as a point of clarification I heard the other night, one of our boards showed no business impacts, and we were reminded that, you know, farms are businesses too. And the point we're trying to make is that there's no business relocations, but when you say impact, obviously there are impacts to existing businesses, but we're not requiring any relocations with the project. Does provide the Cross River redundancy that we've heard from the public since the beginning of the project back with, you know, in the 1990s, really, when it first started, that there's always been a desire to provide not just an improved crossing, but an extra crossing. So that's certainly provided here. Even though it's only maintaining a single of the 41 bridges, you do have an opportunity in the event that something occurs on one of the crossings, traffic can still cross the river below. Total cost estimate, including inflation, is right at $1.5 billion. So that's really kind of the sticking point right now that we'll talk about in a few minutes, though, is, you know, how do we pay for that $1.5 billion? The actual construction itself really hasn't changed a lot since we probably presented this alternative previously. We're still a little over $800 million. If you look at right-of-way, the design, the long-term maintenance is one of the things we obviously have to take into account. That includes maintaining the existing US 41 bridge as well. That's another $434 million. Inflation is a huge cost component right now, so $255 million. So really, in today's dollars, we're looking at about $1.25 billion for the whole project. So in terms of financial feasibility, what we discussed last time we got together was that all the forecasting that's been developed for the project, including the examination of a wide variety of different tolling scenarios, suggests that we don't need more than 6 lanes of Cross River. So I just mentioned that the new interstate crossing could be restriped as 6 lanes by itself, but we never see the need, at least for any of the model runs we've developed thus far through the life of the project, we don't see that would ever be necessary. But, you know, you're building a structure that obviously is going to have a lifespan of up to 100 years. You want to build extra capacity into it. So, it's, you know, these are not going to be structures that can be easily widened. So I want to make sure it's there if it ever is needed. So in terms of that need for Cross River capacity, obviously if you provide more lanes than that, there's more to maintain and there's a higher cost to construct. So really trying to right size the project, if you will, kind of gets to the heart of why we're only maintaining one of the existing US 41 bridges. In terms of trying to maintain the existing steel trusses, you know, we know just the paint alone is a pretty expensive cost. If you average it out, the last paint job would be costing us about $1 million a year just to keep the trusses painted. So if you factor that over the life of this project, just taking one of those bridges out of service is going to save about $145 million. So it's a pretty significant cost savings if you go to the project. So when we met last summer, we really hadn't made a decision. We hadn't made a decision at all about which of the two bridges would be maintained. And some of the alternatives we showed to the public just as a reference point, showed maintaining the southbound bridge. But that, you know, again, we noted that that decision had not been made. It would require coordination with the state historic preservation officer because of the historical context of the structures. The northbound bridge, again, being the older of the two, is considered eligible for the National Register on its own. The southbound bridge, being the younger, is only considered eligible for the National Register because of the context it sits within, and that it's a twin to the northbound bridge. So if we were to remove the northbound bridge from service, and ultimately perhaps even tear it down, the southbound bridge would also lose its eligibility for the National Register. So we would have essentially a double 4F impact in doing so. The northbound bridge, you know, has different construction methodologies. It was primarily welded steel. That's the southbound bridge. Northbound bridge is bolted and riveted. It's actually better construction. So even though it's 30 years older, it seems almost counterintuitive that that would be the one that you would maintain. But for those two primary reasons, you know, that's the bridge that's proposed to be maintained from it. A common comment that we heard for anybody that attended the public meetings was, we want to maintain both bridges. You know, I think to a person, you heard the same common themes that I support the project, but I like one alternative 1B. We'll talk about what that means in just a second. And we'd like to see both of the US 41 bridges maintained. So that was a very common comment that was received. Let's talk a little bit about the financing for the project. So I've already talked about the fact that the draft EIS does have some preliminary financial information. As I've talked to you before, we've looked at a variety of tolling scenarios. And the point we have to make to the public is that NEPA does not dictate tolling business plans, toll rates, etc. So that level of information just is not available yet, nor will it be available as a result of the NEPA process. Ultimately, a bi-state authority will have to determine just exactly what those business plans look like. We're just not there yet. We talked, there's some information that's been out in the public over the years that tolls would pay for 100% of this project, and we just don't see that being feasible. In terms of the overall financial plan, it's going to require a multitude of sources. And I'll show an example from Louisville of how the downtown crossing was paid for when the new I-65 bridge was built in downtown Louisville. In that case, tolling really paid for less than 40% of the project. So that's something to keep in mind. The concepts for the tolling scenarios that we have presented that are included in the draft EIS really kind of encapsulate the bookends, if you will, of the variety of those scenarios that we've examined. So they've given us, alternative 1A assumes tolling both crossings. That would be our highest volume of traffic on tolled crossings, and therefore also our highest level of revenue generated. And alternative 1B is on the opposite end of that spectrum. That's where only tolling I-69. US 41 would remain free for all traffic, autos and cars, autos and trucks. And that also, as a result, provides the lowest amount of revenue. And so again, while we have looked at many different alternatives that are between those two bookends, the charge of the NEPA process is to examine what the impacts are associated with really the kind of the worst, best case scenario, but everything in the middle as well. So as far as the development of the financial plan, you know, some of those variations are likely going to be examined in further detail. But as far as what we're presenting in the EIS right now, it's really just those two options. So that was a question we got quite frequently. Well, would you consider this or would you consider that? And absolutely. You know, there are going to be other options that have to be explored. But these just kind of give you the two ends of the spectrum. And so really kind of getting to the heart of that is what the difference is between alternative 1A and alternative 1B in terms of what that funding gap would be for what tolls pay for versus what we have to find the resources to cover. So in terms of our expected toll revenue, these are the net numbers over the 35-year lifespan of the project. So again, looking forward from 2025, assuming we can get something opened by that early time frame, through 2060. Alternative 1A generates $2.6 billion in net revenue versus 1B, only $1.2 billion. Now, unfortunately, not all that money is available at front, right? Because it's going to be collected over time. Inflation gets calculated into that as well. So if you look at our bonding capacity or our financial capacity based on just the total revenues, it ends up being somewhere around 20% or so. So about $500 million today for Alternative 1A versus $250 million for 1B. So that leaves a gap. If you look, I mentioned earlier, while the overall project cost is at $1.5 billion, that includes inflation. So today's dollars, we're looking at about $1.25. Even under our most aggressive towing scenario right now, we've still got a funding gap of about $750 million. So it's not insignificant, certainly. I mentioned the ORB crossing just for the downtown Louisville I-65, the new Lincoln Bridge. And this is kind of giving an idea of the variety of sources that were utilized in that financial plan. We had Garvey bonds left over from the construction of the parkways in Kentucky. Project total revenue, only $272 million, but there was some financing secured through the TIFIA program at the federal level that were toll secured loans, another $452 million. But if you look at the bottom two rows here, so this is our traditional types of funding sources, federal dollars, state dollars, only about $350 million of that $1.3 billion was actually funded through traditional types of sources. And so that's part of our messaging going forward is going to have to really focus in more on what a likely financial package is going to have to look like. I think there's a misperception that there's going to be some magical dollars appear at some point in the near future to help pay for this project, and then the tolls may not be necessary, what have you. But in reality, we're going to have some hard decisions that are going to have to be made in order to make this project a reality. The worst thing that could possibly happen is we end up where we were in 2004. So we don't want that to occur. So this kind of just reiterates what I was just talking about. So regardless of which tolling scenario we're talking about, there's still a significant funding gap that has to come. But that's our hard work ahead of us is to determine what sources are out there and how we're going to be able to make up for the shortfall. A lot of this is going to be a recap of what we talked about last summer, but there's still some questions being asked, even at the public hearings this week, about, well, where are the toll booths going to be located? And again, this is nothing like the parkway system when it was constructed in Kentucky. This is all electronic tolling. You don't have to slow down to go through these toll gantries. Everything's overhead. Ideally, most motorists, especially if you're local, will have a transponder that will give you a discounted rate, and we'll talk about the rates that are in Louisville right now in just a second. And if you don't have a transponder, it's license plate cap. You get an invoice in the mail, or bill in the mail, usually 4 to 6 weeks after you cross through one of the toll gantries with a picture of your license plate, the time you cross through, etc., and then an invoice to pay your bill. If you don't pay your bill, you may not be able to register your vehicle depending on what state you're in. So if you're a state that's currently Easy Pass compliant, there will be a requirement such that you have to have your invoice, your tolling invoice paid before you can register your vehicle on any basis. So on the tolling rates, while again, we don't make those decisions during the NEPA process, we try to give some information to the public about what a reasonable expectation might be. And again, our most recent and relevant example is just a few hours east in Louisville with the ORB project. When the project opened to traffic fully in December of 2016, the initial toll rates are what you see up here. So if you had a transponder, you pay $2 as a passenger vehicle, $5 as a delivery size truck, and $10 for semi-trailers. And then on the opposite end of the spectrum here, if you are not using a transponder, there's essentially a $2 surcharge that helps cover the cost of collect. So that covers the cost of preparing the invoices, getting the invoices sent out, et cetera. So that surcharge is an additional profit. It's basically just to try to recapture the cost of what the cost to collect would be. Toll rates can increase and do increase on an annual basis, and it's either at the highest of either CPI inflation rate or 2.5% per year. So in July of 2018, we got our first toll rate increase. So now the toll with transfer is $2.07. So that's again a reasonable expectation, but we don't know. Tolls could be higher, tolls could be lower. They don't necessarily have to be the same. If we toll both facilities as is proposed at alternative 1A, there's a possibility that the toll rates may be different on the crossings. We just don't have that information yet. Again, because that requires input from a body that does not yet exist. But then going back to that ORB example, a bi-state authority was established with input from both states, and they are the body that ultimately makes those decisions. We need those decisions made before a record of decision is received on the project, because we have to know, we have a financially feasible project, and having that level of input is critical. So this is the kind of work that has to happen over the course of the coming year. We've also presented just some preliminary information, some thoughts that have been discussed about potential mitigation, especially under a scenario where both crossings might be tolled. And so, having opportunities to acquire and fund transponders with cash, not everyone has a bank account or a credit card. So we need to make sure that not only are transponders widely available, can you get them on both sides of the river? Are they easily accessible locations, et cetera? You make sure that you can also pay for those with cash, and you can continue to fund your account using cash. Now, we're talking about widespread availability, but the Louisville example also, there's a frequent user or commuter discount rate, if you will. If you make a minimum of 20 round-trip crossings of either the downtown or East End Bridge in Louisville in a month period, you get a 50% credit back to your account for each of those crossings. So, in effect, you're paying a $1 toll for each single trip across the river. So something like that is certainly going to be considered here as well. And then I just mentioned that there's a possibility of looking at different tolling rates should the decision ultimately be made to toll both crossings. And it may be specific for low-income users, or it may be for all users. Again, we don't make those decisions, but these are just some of the issues that are having to be faced by that bi-state tolling. Any questions on those alternatives before I move on? We've already talked a little bit about the public hearings this week, and again, excellent turnout in both meetings. Kind of went through a very high level what some of the comments we received were. I think at both meetings, I only heard one public comment that was voicing anything against the project overall. So that's very encouraging. And that's one of the comments I've heard from Federal Highway Administration is that it's encouraging to go to public hearings and hear such vocal and nearly unanimous support for a project. So that's certainly I think testament to the fact that this project is wanted and needed. So again, our public comment period goes through February 8th. All the information that was presented, with very few exceptions, is available on the project website. We had stations where we demonstrated noise levels, because that's a common request. They want to know how much noise are they going to occur where they live. So we had an example station that showed different levels at different decibel levels, so that they can get an idea of what's out there today at where they live versus what might be expected by 2045 should the project be constructed. We had not just the video I showed a few minutes ago, but we also had a 3D virtual reality version where you could put on the goggles and kind of drive through project as well, so that was also a thing for fun. Pam mentioned the community conversations that are scheduled ahead of us, and these are essentially opportunities to provide in a more informal setting feedback, but also a more intimate setting. So we got one scheduled on Wednesday, January 23rd, and then on Thursday, January 24th, we're on the Saddle River. So if you weren't able to attend the public hearings, or if you know anyone, any of your constituents, friends, family, colleagues that would like to attend, more than welcome to come out to either one of those. We'll have ample staff there to hear the input. The draft environmental impact statement is available in its entirety on our project website, including all those technical appendices. If you're having any trouble sleeping at night, I highly encourage you to pick up any of the appendices, because that will do some favors there. The project offices I mentioned are being staffed a little bit more robustly than they are ordinarily. So you can schedule time to come in, or if you just want to stop in on any of the regularly scheduled days, we'll have staff there that can help answer questions. And then for those that need hard copies of the draft EIS, they're available in a variety of different locations on both sides of the river as well. So we've got hard copies that obviously back in the project offices, and anybody can stop in and So if any of you want to provide input, or if you know anyone that has not yet had opportunity to provide feedback, there were a number of different ways to do that. I would note that social media is not formal commenting on the project. So while we are monitoring both Twitter and Facebook for the project team, any comments received through either of those sources do not constitute formal comments. So we're glad to take the feedback, but we're not necessarily going to respond to any of that. In terms of what's next, again, comment period through early February, got a lot of work to do ahead of us. There were refinements to Central Alternative 1. We're going to be looking at these interchanges in a little bit more detail, determine what those needs are going to be. We've got, obviously, a lot of work to do on the financial side. We're already starting the process of examining grant opportunities, anything that's out there that we have a possibility of obtaining, we're going to try to leverage that. So anything that we can do to try to even provide a little bit of money for the project, we're going to try to get every dollar that we can to help the overall financial feasibility of the project. Bi-state coordination is really kind of a critical point, though, that needs to get initiated soon. And that really will help us overall with that financial plan once we get some better clarity on what an ultimate tolling scenario might look like for a single preferred alternative that ultimately goes into the final areas. And then by the end of this year, late fall, early winter is our timetable right now, looking to have a final environmental impact statement published and a record of decision from the Federal Highway Administration. That's really all I've got to present. I'll gladly take any questions anybody might have about anything related to the project.
You said in the spring is really, spring, summer is when the financial plan gets put together. Is that when the bi-state body would then be formed? Or, I mean, I don't know, is that when it gets formed, or is that recommendations on that body then gets created?
Well, we have got work to do even outside of that body, because, we'll ultimately need to be providing information to them to inform the process. So, again, in terms of trying to, if there are grants available out there, we start going ahead and applying for those, et cetera. So even, that's not necessarily critical for us to have that body established today. But, before we get to the end of this year, a final EIS, we certainly need that level of input and those decisions.
How is that body formed?
That I can't answer. I think that really requires input from the highest levels of government, most of it. So that comes through county government.
Any other questions, comments? If not, thank you very much for providing that update. We're going to move on to new business, and Pam, this first one is for you. It's the transportation conformity document.
So I have two copies of it here if anybody's interested in taking a quick look at them. Transportation conformity is being established for our Metropolitan Transportation Plan 2040 and the fiscal year 2018-2021 Transportation Improvement Program, or our TIP. And those are the existing plan and TIP that we have in place today. The conformity is needed as a result of a recent decision from the U.S. Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia Circuit in the South Coast Air Quality Management District versus EPA. And what that did was it struck down portions of the 2008 Ozone Standards State Implementation Plan Requirements Rule concerning ozone standards, as well as the anti-backsliding requirements associated with the revocation of the 1997 ozone standards. Mouthful. But as a result of that, what we have to do is areas that Vandenberg and Moore County, in particular, does not include Henderson, doesn't include Kentucky, but Vandenberg and Moore County had been determined to be a maintenance area for the 1997 ozone standards at the time of that revocation, and they are designated as attainment for the 2008 ozone standards. But since the revocation, we've not been required to make a transportation conformity determination. As a result of this court case, though, we are now required to do a form of a regional conformity determination. That conformity determination typically in the past would require us to do some transportation modeling in terms of volumes of traffic, and then also input that into an air quality model, all that kind of thing. Well, we don't have to do any of that. What we do have to do, though, is address four remaining criteria. And one is that these documents have been developed using the latest planning assumptions, that the documents were developed with consultation with an interagency consultation group, that there are, it includes the timely implementation of traffic control measures if they were included in the state implementation plan, and that both documents are fiscally constrained. We've done the determination based on those four criteria. That's this two-page document. And we have determined that we meet all of those criteria. We've used the latest planning assumptions. We have consulted with our interagency consultation group. We are not required to implement any TCMs. They weren't in our state implementation plan, so that one we didn't really have to do anything with. But both documents are fiscally constrained. And with that, this conformity document determines that we've met the criteria. So.
The comment period ends today?
Ends today at 11 o'clock. Okay. We incorporated the time here at this meeting in case we got any comments here as well. To date, though, we've gotten no comments on this.
Are you looking for a specific action, or is this an approval request, correct?
This is an approval request, and what you're technically doing is you're approving us to take it to the policy meeting this afternoon, and then the policy committee will approve the final document and we'll send it.
Any comments before we vote on this? If not, we'd approve a motion to approve. Second, please. Any other discussion? All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? That's approved. And the next one is just on the TIP modification. That's just informational?
It's just informational. Kentucky Transportation Cabinet requested that we modify our TIP for the installation of high friction surface on US 41 north of the US 60 interchange. It's considered a grouped project. We're adding construction in fiscal year 2019 at a construction cost of $220,000. And that'll be funded using HSIP, which is safety funding and toll credits in lieu of a state match.
Okay. Thank you. And the next is the draft fiscal year 2020-2024 program of projects. Informational again.
So we are in the process of updating our TIP. In your packet, we have a memo and 17 pages of projects. And what this is called the Program of Projects. It outlines how we anticipate the federal dollars being spent on projects in our MPO area in the next 5 years. Typically we do a 4 year, we're doing a 5 year TIP this time. Our fiscal years, it's the funding is shown in fiscal years, and our fiscal year begins July 1 of the year and then ends June 30th of the following year. We round the dollars up to the nearest thousands because this document isn't intended to be a budgeting or an accounting document. It's intended to explain how the funding is being spent in general and then to fiscally constrain. And then the other thing I want to note is that we list projects by contract. And by that I mean, for example, if you turn to page 2, the second project from the top, the State Road 62 project, it's a bridge over CSX Railroad. But this project is more than just that one location. It also includes the bridge over Carpenter Creek and a bridge over Teacouple Avenue. All three of those locations are covered under one contract. So this total amount is for all three bridges, not just the one bridge that's shown. And that's an example of how we do this by contract. Another example would be on page 3. The second project from the bottom. It's a contract that covers various locations where the state will be doing a bridge thin deck overlay. Rather than listing all of the locations, it could be 4, it could be 25. We cover it by contract. We just say that this contract is going to do various locations. It's a bridge thin deck overlay. And the total cost is for that total contract, all of those locations. And in some cases, some of these locations may not be in our MPO area, but we want to show you the total contract cost. So if you do track that contract through letting, you'll have an apples-to-apples comparison. So. This is for you to review. You can ask questions today. You're welcome to do that. We do ask that if you have any comments or questions or feedback that you're interested in, that you get it to us by January 24th. This is just a first draft on this program. We will be coming back to you with a draft of the TIP document as a whole with any changes to this program and project, so you'll have yet another opportunity to talk about the projects. But this is kind of an upfront time frame for you to look at it. One other note, as you look through the program and projects, you will not see the Ohio River Crossing Bridge included in this at this point in time. Given the situation we're in right now with it out for public review and everything, we're still working with the project team to determine how to represent that project in this document, but it will be in there when we come back with the draft document.
Comments? Thank you very much. Other business. Is there any other business you brought forth? Any public comments from the public? If not, just make a motion to adjourn. Second? If there's no opposition, we're adjourned.